This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Metal Shop here on 99.9 KISW. We are backstage at the historic Showbox Soto with Jamie Josta from Hatebreed. How's it going, man?
Very good. Good to see you guys. Yeah, the tour's been great so far. We made our way quick to the Pacific Northwest. We only did like a week of shows and we're already out here, so, but it was good. We started in Buffalo, went to Lawrence, Kansas, and then we had a travel day, and then we did Denver, and then Boise, and now we're here.
I don't know.
Yeah, Spokane was fun too, but that was no Guar. It was just us. Yeah, Guar went and did a festival.
Right on. Spokane needs shows.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I was happy people remembered us, because sometimes in the smaller cities, if you're not like played on the big commercial rock station, or if you're not playing the big festival, the radio festival or whatever, it's harder for them, because there's, you know, it's just less, they get less shows. Sometimes it can be good, sometimes it can be bad. But for us, I think it worked out pretty good. We hadn't been to Spokane in years, but we, you know, that's a place we played with Slipknot, played with Slayer, played with Soulfly. I mean, we played with Typo Negative, we played with Black Label, but just that was when we were touring every year. Now it's like every other year or every 2 years.
They still remember.
They did. It was not bad. I was surprised. And now, you know, because I was telling people, like, in those weird spots, see the bands that you can see when they come through, because, you know, you never know.
You gotta make some Juggalos and like,
yeah, the venue's fucking burned down and promoters leave town, and like, we had that in Boise where the venue burnt down. Then we were lucky that they gave us another venue, this place called Revolution Concert Hall or something. We thought the show was going to be just canceled.
Yeah.
And it turned out all right. There was probably 500 people there. I was like, and it was good. Like, they were aged. But we were going to have a night off. And then we would have never went back. Once the club burns down, then it's like, all right, it's bad mojo, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, you're back here in the Northwest. You talk about Spokane, Seattle. What's your favorite Northwest band of all time? You can name a couple if you have to. Bands that maybe not around anymore, bands that are still around. Doesn't matter. Favorite Northwest bands?
You know, I was just talking about this. Who was I talking about this with? I think it was with Frank. Because I was saying that my favorite Northwest band was probably Heart.
Nice, dude, yeah.
And then we were talking about, wow, you know, Heart really had such an influence on not just the rock and metal, but, like, even punk and, like, all different styles of music. Yeah. You can hear some of the influence, but, you know, there's a lot. I mean... We were just talking about Worl Dane, we were talking.
R.I.P.
Yeah, rest in peace, Worl. And I was in Brazil, and I had Worl on my podcast twice. But back in the day, like, we would have Nevermore on Headbangers. I would go see them play. I would go see them play at, like, Worcester Metal Fest. Like, they don't, like, Nevermore. That lane is open right now for someone to start like a Nevermore sounding band.
Yeah,
and that could be like its own lane. Because it kind of...
I mean, you're right. There's a whole new film there.
Yeah. They were like pre-metalcore. They were too metal for the metalcore thing. But they weren't like classic metal enough for the classic metal thing. It was like a weird in-between.
Kind of proggy.
Yep. Yeah. No, like they... Queensryche is doing really well right now.
Oh, yeah.
And with Todd in the band, and like... That's a tour I could see. If Nevermore was still around, I could see them going out with the new Queensryche,
yeah,
killing it. But yeah.
Well,
that's a good.
He's Northwest, Northwestern.
Yeah. From Bellevue.
Yeah. So there you go. I mean, but if you want to go like core or like, I don't know, punk, I mean, I just saw Greg from Trial when I was in Europe.
I just saw him yesterday.
No way. Yeah, I saw him at some festival. I probably complained to him about the terrible the terrible accommodations at the festival, and he was probably like, Joss is going soft on me. No, I don't know.
Well, I saw him yesterday. He was talking because he came into my office, and he was talking about, because he runs 100 for Haiti, and they just had another big earthquake down there. So he was trying to get a lawyer involved so they could, because they work with sexual assault survivors, and they're trying to build roofs and trying to educate kids. So I didn't know you were friends with Greg, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, we did a tour. We did a tour with, I think I booked the tour. I forget what the deal was. Like, we did a tour. It was like, it was Hatebreed and Trial. And then I was interning. I think at the time I was interning at a booking agency, and I was trying to explain, none of those guys are in this lineup. Actually, Chris is in this lineup, I think, from that time. But don't quote me on that. It might have, right. We might have done it as a four-piece with Ian from Blood for Blood filling in on bass. I don't know. But anyways, I remember explaining to those guys in the Hatebreed lineup at the time that there's venues that will allow heavy bands to play. It's just usually not bands from the punk and the hardcore scene. It's more like metal. And I said, like, if we, you know, because it was a hard tour. We played in a garage in El Paso. We played in a mechanic's yard. I mean, we grew up going to shows like at Toad's Place, or we would go to shows at like VFW Hall.
And you used to book a skate park, right?
Yeah, skate parks. So, but even that was hard. You couldn't, there was no skate parks that would hold a concert in some of the area. So, yeah, I was saying, well, like, no offense to like Trial or those styles of bands. I mean, they're great bands, but promoters weren't exactly clamoring to book us to bands. We had to play for free, or we had to do a door deal. And then, you know, you go, oh, how many people paid? They go, 7 people paid. And it was, so how much? So it's $14 for the two bands. So you'd have stuff like that that was happening. And, you know, it would be like, God, maybe one day we'll be allowed to play at like a venue with a stage,
at a venue
with a PA,
right.
Like with, where you would like, where you have a monitor board and you could hear the guitars through the monitor.
That'll never happen,
right,
dude.
That's never, yeah.
And so like that was a lot of that tour, was that. But yeah, we did a tour with Trial.
You know, I mean, while we're talking about some old school stuff and foundational music, like one of our favorite questions to ask everybody is like, when you're young and a kid in formative eras, like what was a light bulb moment for you? Was there a specific moment you can think back and remember, a record, maybe a show that somebody took you to, older sibling or whatever, that the light bulb went off and you're like, I got to be a part of this. Like, I really want to do this.
Music.
It was the reverse. It was, we got thrown out of a Fugazi show for moshing and stage diving. And so then it was like the reverse light bulb. It was like, wow, I don't want to have anything to do with this.
Okay.
So that was like, I was just talking about this on one of my podcasts with, I think it was the show with John Joseph from Cro-Mags, because in a weird way, that like moment of being like, well, wow, they don't like the aggression. I was like, I thought they were in Minor Threat. I thought it was all aggression. Like, but they had gone past that.
Yeah.
Now I totally see where they were coming from. Now I agree with them.
See,
so I came full circle. So I got to get a hold of Ian McKay. I got to get a hold of him and be like, man, I thought you were the biggest dick, but you were right. It's like with Lars.
See it now.
Right. It was like with Lars.
Lars and Nap.
Yeah, I remember coming out and being, it was right after Metallica was on Headbangers Ball, and being like, well, you know, for us, for a band like at our level, we just like the exposure. The guy at my label was like, you f***ing idiot. You would have had a gold record. Perseverance would have a gold plaque on the wall if it wasn't for Napster. They pirated hundreds of thousands of copies. You might even have a platinum record. I go, oh man, really? I could have showed my mom a gold record? So if anybody wants to go to whatever's left of Best Buy, if you have a Best Buy, if you can find Perseverance, go buy it. It's getting close. It might creep. Maybe by 20 years, it'll creep.
That would be awesome.
There's a Silver Platters down the street, so we can go pick it up at Silver Platters.
But here's the problem. We need everybody to buy like 4.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But yeah, like,
give it to your friend.
Yeah. So then we made these shirts. When I first started the podcast, we made these shirts that said Lars was right, and they sold out in a day.
Nice.
And now I go places where I see dudes in bands wearing them.
Nice.
Lars was right. Yeah, because we could have we could have, if we were smart, we could have protected our intellectual property like the video game companies did, or we could have started our own streaming services and got ahead of the curve. But, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
So you obviously are doing music full-time on the tour with Hatebreed. You do Josta, and then you're also – you worked with Dee Snider. But then, you know, you're touring and doing your podcast. How do you record your podcast, like, on tour? Do you do it on tour with, like, a laptop?
Yeah, yeah. I used to have a whole setup with mic stands and mics and a Focusrite preamp and everything. But now I'm just I made it more like travel friendly because I can, now that we have a real network and I have an ownership stake in the network, like we actually have a real budget so I can fly on the off days and do shows. So I did, yeah, I did. I'm actually just confirmed Jakey Lee, which I'm excited about. I'm going to Vegas on the off day to get him on the podcast, you know, and that's why I say, like, you know, people will hear these interviews and they'll go, oh yeah, you know, it's all about the money, this and that, you know, you would have had a gold record without Napster, but it really, We don't do podcasts and make music to make money. We make money to make more music and more podcasts. And so, you know, when you start to share in your own ad revenue, like I never got to share in ad revenue on Headbangers, but now I do, and I share in subscriber revenue and things like that. So now it's like we even added video content to the network. Did a little pilot show and we're doing another episode of the show and we're doing video episodes. So really it gives you options, right?
And shout out to
Gas Digital, yep. And we just signed Andrew Dice Clay.
Nice.
Almost said Andrew WK. Yeah.
That'd be cool too.
Yeah, hey.
Party
he's,
podcast.
Hey, open offer if he wants to come to the network.
Boom.
I just traded message with him actually because I thought he'd be a really cool guest for episode 400. But I ended up getting Jonathan Davis, which was fascinating. We got deep into like astral traveling in the spirit world and all sorts of crazy spacey shit. And that was, and I couldn't have done that without like subscribers and sponsors. Cause even just in the same town, you know, he's like, I can't do it till midnight. Then it's like, all right, I got to get a hotel. I got to get runners. Then the runner's not available. I got to get Ubers. Then I got to get a taxi back because there's no Ubers.
It's a full production.
It was a whole night. I mean, I was exhausted for the 1 hour fucking episode.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I don't know how people do it. And then parking and then, you know, it's getting into the venue. They're giving me a hard time and I'm not that guy. So I just go, well, I was in a band. I played down the street and then they're like, oh, we're sorry, dude. And I'm like, well, this is how you treat like a normal like journalist coming to interview the dude? Yeah, so I feel for you guys, like, and everybody having to do it. Because I'll get people, I'll do podcasts where the guest has no idea who I am or what I do or what the show's about. And it's like, oh, my God. It's like, Jesus. It's like... And then I'll do a podcast with a huge celebrity with millions of Instagram followers. It's so easy. I just hit up directly and I go right to their house.
Yeah,
and
it's
so simple.
But because they get it, too, it's easier to just
right.
Just come on through.
Right. But then you get like some no-name band who has a publicist or they're like hot in like, you know, they're like, oh, they're on alternative press. I'm like, I haven't, no offense to alternative press. I haven't seen an issue.
Yeah. Where is that? Hot Topic?
But do you know what I mean? Like a band like that, that's probably a big deal.
Yeah.
It's meaningless to me, but it's a big deal to them, and so they think they're a big thing, and then you're waiting.
You know,
yeah, and I'm like, oh, the whole whatever. I don't want to get into the whole
sure.
So there's bands like that are totally cool. Like I did Andy from Black Veil Brides, and he was totally cool, and he's probably on every cover of that.
That's one thing about your podcast is like sometimes I'll, you know, I listen to all your podcasts and sometimes I'm like, I don't really like this band, but I'll listen to it and I always get something from it. Sometimes I'll just like laugh at their ridiculousness or I'll just love the conversation and I might not like the music, but I'll gain a new appreciation for that person. And I always like, I like you breaking the fourth wall with the business. We, as fans, you know, we just go to the shows, we see you guys, and then, but we get to also get a kind of behind the scenes of the business. Is that, was there any pushback about from like any of your people about like actually getting into all that kind of stuff?
Well, yeah, because if a band's not run a certain way and then a member of that band hears it and then brings it up, it can cause drama. But I mean, hey, that's the deal you get into. If you're, you know, if you don't like the deal, I mean, we were just talking about this with a major band, a huge band, who didn't get one of the original members back, and you know, that that person ended up on my show. We didn't really get into it about the business end, but his stuff was already publicized, and I heard from various people that it kind of ruffled feathers, and I was like, but we didn't even really get into it. Yeah. He already got into that stuff on other shows. So, but you become complicit in certain things, or you become like this catalyst. But it's fine. I mean, I used to love, like, some of my favorite bands growing up, and this is I have to be careful about how I say things, because then people hear it and they get upset. But some of my favorite bands, they torpedoed their own careers, and even though it's no secret, by me saying that, they get mad because all I did was learn from their mistakes. Okay, well, let me not do this, and let me not treat this person like this, and let me not do that. And meanwhile, it's no offense to them. You helped us. You helped a lot of bands. Should we be able to talk about that candidly and openly? Yeah, but
what not to.
Yes.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
And so, and then, you know, and but there's something to be said about a lot of those bands where the legend follows them, and it was too real and it was too crazy, and the party was 10 times harder than any other party, and more power to them, because they'll go down in infamy. I'm just not trying to do that. I'm trying to go down with a fucking retirement plan and some sort of shred of health. And I you know, like, a guy here tonight, he probably doesn't want me to say, I never say his name on my podcast because he's asked me politely not to say his name, but he worked for Prince, he's worked for Guns N' Roses, he's worked for the biggest of the big, and you know, he'll say what you want about Axl, right, but he says, you know, Axl does things a certain way, and it's why he's still on top, it's why his voice is still in tip-top shape, why he can go do stadiums with AC/DC and go do stadiums with GNR. Now, back in the day, don't get me wrong, I love Duff. I love Steven Adler. I had them both on my podcast. Yeah. Yeah, and I would have loved them to be in the band the entire time. But that's not how the business end worked out. I forget what was public, but they got bought out, basically, right? And then he got to use the name and go. I forget what the exact story is, but that's the gist of it, right? Now, 20, 30, 25 years later, whatever, they get back together. It's a huge payday for everybody. Everybody rides off into the sunset, and all bygones be bygones. And that's a happy ending, right? For the most part. Right. Yeah. And with the exception of Steven and Izzy, which we don't, you know, Steven, I love Steven, but I don't know if he would have been able to do 3 hours. He could have. And we want to think he could. I mean, I saw him do an hour with his band, and he ripped it, and he did all the songs great, and he was tight. I mean, it would have been great to see him come out and just do Appetite.
But that's a long Guns N' Roses set, dude.
Three hours.
That's a serious. Yes. Right. So, in hardcore and punk rock, we don't usually see happy endings like this. Even with this Misfits thing, I don't know. We don't know. We'll see. Right, but this is 30 years they didn't play together. They weren't friends. It was lawsuit upon lawsuit. I'm not trying to have all that in my life, right? Mm-hmm. So does that mean I don't get to the arena level, or I don't get to the Dead at 27 infamy level or whatever? That's, you know what I mean? So it's all relative on how you look at it. But
you guys are consistent.
Right, it's like slow and steady wins the race. But so we were talking about Prince today, and I was telling him about a sound check we were at, and I've told this story probably on my podcast, but you know, he was telling me just about how mean Prince was to him. And I'm like, not to speak ill of the dead, because he can't defend himself, so he's, you know, I don't say too much of it. But you know, I think of things like that, and I'm not ever going to be viewed at the talent level of, or the genius level of someone like a Prince. But I'm also hopefully not going to be viewed as like the worst dickhead who was so like shitty to the guitar tech or the local loader or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I do. Maybe some of it was drugs too. And you know, we'll tell these sort of behind the scenes stories, to go back to your question. It's just that then, you know, management will call or a lawyer will call. I had a lawyer straight up call me and say, this band was not offered this tour. This is a lie. You need to edit this out. And, you know, so it's just,
because of your podcast?
Yeah, because I had someone who was a little inebriated say something about a tour, and it was embellished.
But
and as we know from the CM Punk podcast, podcasts can be put in lawsuits.
Yes. Yes. And so you got to be, so anything, everything is allegedly. So allegedly, exactly. Prince was, you know, just a dick to this guy who also worked for us at one point in time. But he was telling me, you know, how he was saying, like, when he first started working for me, I would always eat the end of the bread. And I would eat the last piece. And he goes, why do you always eat the bread? There's all these loaves of bread. And I go, well, that's how you could tell who's from money and who isn't. Someone who eats the butt of the bread, I used to have to eat the butt of the bread. I waited in line for government cheese. I don't know if you guys had government cheese out here, but we had it where we go get bread and milk and cheese. And I used to get beat up for having food stamps. So, like, I'm not trying to be poor. There's no fucking glory in being poor. And so now that I have money...
No punk rock guilt in you, right?
Right. So now that I have money, I'm like, I'm trying to do the right things to ensure, like, I never got a car when I was 16. I got like a $200 car that broke down. And I bought my daughter a car when she was 16. I have her college all saved for, like, that's what I'm trying to do, be out of my dream. So if that means that, you know, you might ruffle some feathers, I'm just saying maybe someone will take this. Maybe the next kid will take it and use it and not make the same stupid mistakes. So yeah, a predatory publisher is going to be mad at the podcast because I'm going to tell the kids, don't sign away your publishing. Don't give some idiot 50% of your publishing who's never going to do anything.
It's because you care. It's because you give a shit, and because you've seen it. So you're also being that guy who allows an appropriate use of experiences you've had to pass along maybe a little level of knowledge to some of these up-and-comers. I mean,
yeah.
Is that one of your goals with your podcast? I mean, obviously it's really good. We both listen to it all the time. But I see you passing along knowledge to these younger bands too. And I almost see like eye-opening moments, even through audio, for some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's already paid itself back in the form of bands that I know are going to be bigger that will then return the favor. I mean, it happened for Hatebreed with Slipknot. It happened for Hatebreed with Disturbed. It happened for Hatebreed with System of a Down. Slipknot, we met them before they were signed. They were in the front row at our show at Harry Mary's in Des Moines. They gave us
That's awesome.
So you know what I mean? And yeah. and they're like, you guys are on tour. And they're like, we're gonna sign a Roadrunner. We were like, holy shit, that's big. We're like, yeah, we were like jokingly, like, if you ever get big, take us on tour. They did.
Thank you.
So you know what I mean? Like it's a cyclical power, and then there's like the kid that, you know, is opening for you one day, like on Danzig 6 feet Under, Hatebreed, Disturbed was the opener. So yeah. Late, you know what I mean? Later on, when like the Guitar Hero stuff was really, really big and hardcore became like a really dirty word and people didn't want to go to the shows and people were like, Hatebreed, fuck that, I'm not going to that show. Disturbed put us on their off day shows and we got to play to like 2,000-3,000 people a night and whatever, it's only 5 or 6 shows. But we still play those cities where we play with them, and right. People go, I remember seeing you.
I was there.
And they go,
I was 16 at that show.
Right, and they go, now I like Judge and Agnostic Front and all these like bands that we were the gateway band. Right. So that's how it happens. I just did a Josta, show in a tour in Europe, and I took Dino as a special guest because Dino was one of those people who was cool to me back in the day. Fear Factory played Toe's Place and other, I won't say what other bands, but other dudes like blew me off, wouldn't take my demo, wouldn't talk to me. Dino did. Now Dino's not playing with Fear Factory. They're dealing with some stuff behind the scenes. And I said, what are you doing? You're sitting home? Come with me. I'll pay you. Come out and just, nice. I'll pay you to come on the bus, hang out. We'll do live podcasts. And then you come out and do 4 Fear Factory songs. Crowd went crazy when he would come out. So it's all comes around, you know, like.
Life's all about relationships, man. That's the point. So that leads me to my next question. And we've coined this term from you, the term Punisher.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's, how did you describe that? Somebody who just kind of corners you?
You have a lot of Punishers in the Pacific Northwest. See, you have the highest density of Punishers.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And you have a multiple.
We are Punishers. We're just paid Punishers.
No, you guys aren't Punishers. I'm talking about. See, you have multiple styles and types of Punishers. You have the train hopping Punisher.
Yes.
You have the
crusty Punisher.
The crust Punisher, Punkisher, the Crust Punkisher.
Then on the corner.
Yep. You have the Backpack Rapper Punisher.
Ah, yeah.
I don't know what happened, but you guys have like the one of the craziest, most condensed, like, area of Backpack Rap fans.
Selling you $5 CD on the corner.
Yep. You have the tech, the tech space Punisher, who's like has a startup, sees a tour bus, thinks because you're in a tour bus, you might want to invest in his startup, so waits outside the tour bus. Then you also have
I've not heard that one.
Tech Punisher.
Yeah, tech space Punisher. You also have the hiking Punisher. Like, you're just trying to go on a hike. And now they want to talk to you for 30 minutes,
right.
And you're trying to be alone with nature,
right.
Hiker
hey,
Punisher.
Man, hey, man.
Yeah.
Get out of my face, dude.
Yeah.
Okay, so that the follow-up question to that would be, first of all, sorry.
Tech Punisher sounds like a Fear Factory song.
Yes.
Hey, so that said, what's an appropriate way to be approached? Like, and like... Would you have any advice for people to maybe we can help eliminate some of that punishing in the area? Like, what's a good way that somebody comes up to you? What's a bad way? Maybe give us an example or two for people who don't know.
All right, yeah. You have to, first of all, you have to atone for your past punishment. And I've done this in multiple occasions because I realized that I was being a punisher. So I remember when... podcast first started up, somebody was like, you got to do a podcast. And I'm like, what is it? Just fucking explain to me what it is.
Right.
It's like a radio show. And I was like, well, that I like, because then you don't have to go and like, you don't have people commenting on, you know, your shirt that you wore and your haircut and this whole, like, that's the weird thing. Once you're on TV once,
YouTube shows,
or like, it's you're just like, did you watch the video? What do you care about what's in the background,
right.
Did you that's why podcasts are great, because you don't have all these distractions, because people are so distracted they miss the fucking point. It's like on Instagram when you post a fucking photo of the show and they go, the crowd's really lame. It's a fucking still photo.
Yeah.
What do you want there to be like waves of movement to prove that they were moving? Are you fucking, you're out of your mind? So people are so out of their mind that they might not realize,
right,
their past punishment.
Tone for it.
Yeah, so this dude was like, he worked at our old label. He's like, this is years ago. I mean, this has to be like 7-8 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago. He's like, you got to get on Joe Rogan's podcast. It's big. Now, this is back then. This is years ago. I didn't even know what the podcast was. So I go out for this fight. I fly out. I see this fight, but I had to get back because it was around the holidays. And my girlfriend was like, I can't believe you're going to watch this. This is bull. And I'm like, you don't understand. These guys, this is the only time they're going to fight. I'm flying to Vegas, and then I'll get on the first flight out. It'll be at 5 a.m. Yeah.
You won't even miss me.
So I'm walking behind this guy, and I see this guy, and I'm like, this guy is built. Like, he's like as wide as this TV.
Huge.
And I'm like, and he's like walking like he's like a fucking gorilla. And I'm like, who is this guy? And I look, it's Rogan. I'm like, and so I'm like, wait. So I text my guy from my label. They're 3 hours ahead.
Right.
He's like, yo, you got to hit him up. They passed. The producer doesn't know who Hapred is, doesn't know who you are. They said they don't want you on the show. They passed on you. I was like, all right, cool. Then I started thinking, oh, wait, this is borderline Punisher territory.
Hey, man.
He just commentated the fights last night. He was obviously up late. He's doing the same thing as me. Get out early, get home, right? So I thought, all right, I'm just gonna make it quick. So I make the approach, and I can tell within like the first like 15 seconds of the thing that he thought I was a Punisher.
It's time to check out.
Right.
Right.
And so I said, well, I'm in this band, and we're called Hatebreed. And then he changed. Then his demeanor changed a little bit. And he goes, no, it wasn't like any, it wasn't positive. It just was an acknowledgement. Like, it was like, oh, right on. Oh yeah. I've heard of Hatebreed. And I was like, yes, I don't really know. Like, the, you know, your producer passed and that's cool. But like, if we could ever work it out, that'd be great. I would love to. And meanwhile, I have no idea what it is, because if I had an idea, I would have changed my whole interaction up. Yeah. So it depends. Are you trying to create an opportunity for yourself? Then you need to do research. And you need to have your f-ing story straight, and you got to have your bullet. They call it an elevator pitch. Right. So I did it wrong, because then I go home. Oh no, I get on the flight and I start listening to it. And it's like f-ing scientists and PhDs
talking about doing mushrooms out in the forest.
And I'm looking through all the different guests, and there's nobody from any bands. Yeah. Nobody. I think the one at that time was maybe like Everlast, who I had met once or twice. And I was like, right. And I'm thinking, no wonder, like, it must look so stupid. Like if some, that's like a PhD coming to me from some university and going, hey, can I come on your podcast? I'd be like, well, that's not really like what I do. So anyways, I felt foolish, but he was cool. Everything was cool. Right. But I was probably being a punisher. So now when I'm told, hey, this person passed, like this happened for a radio show on Sirius. So I saw the guy, and I confronted him at the Ozzy premiere. But I had listened to his show a bunch, so I knew what the show was. And then next morning, I got the call, and I got to go on the show, and it was great. And so, but he did say, not the next morning, like whatever, a week later, but I listened the next morning, and he said on the show that he met me. But he didn't say I was a punisher. So I knew my pitch was probably...
So study before you punish.
Right, have your pitch down. So if you saw Sylvester Stallone, right? Let's go through it. So say you want to get Sylvester Stallone on the station. So you got your one chance. You know what? What would your pitch be? You got to go, I love the escape plan. You got to go with the one that no one else loved.
Exactly. Especially the
Copland was the
You have to.
But it's about his most recent one. Especially, I mean, does that have anything to do with, like, your most recent album you're trying to pitch to? Or, like, cause does that light a thing in your mind? You're like, does that have anything to do with it at all?
I had a friend who knew I had a bad experience with Bruce Dickinson on Headbangers Ball.
Yeah, I've always heard this story.
And he said to me, I had a really bad experience with Bruce Dickinson, too. But don't tell this to anybody or whatever, so I won't name the name. But when he changed the conversation the next time around, I said... This was my advice to him. I said, change the conversation to something that he loves, that he's interested in, and then you won't be a punisher. And he did. He changed the conversation to being about planes. And he loves these fucking like World War planes or whatever. So all of a sudden he brightened up, and fucking all of a sudden he didn't feel like he was being punished.
Right. Give him something to talk about that he gives a shit about.
Right. So if I saw Stallone and I wanted to make the hard pitch, I would say, hey, we had a song in XXX. But I don't know. What if he hates Vin Diesel? He could be like, fuck them. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You don't know. You got to...
I slapped the taste out of Vin Diesel's mouth one time.
That was a hard scene, though. The avalanche scene with Hatebreed, I Will Be Heard, that was, like, epic, dude.
Now, we tried with Escape Plan. I'm not kidding you. I hit up the director. The director is down for the core. He knew it. And he almost
had a spot.
What a weird small
He world. Almost had a spot. So you got to go for your shot. You got to take your shot. And you got to do it, but you just got to do it right.
Do it right. Yeah. Do it correctly, yeah.
All right, man. You're always busy. We were talking about that earlier, podcasting, doing the band, doing tour. What are you working on right now?
Oh, we're doing pre-production right now for Elisa White Gluz. She has a solo album coming out next year. So we're doing pre-production on that, and then we might do another D album, like a part two.
That's awesome.
Cause he's kind of coming around to the other songs and other ideas we had.
Yeah, that's one of the best things I've heard all year.
And you hooked him with the one, and how successful it was.
Yeah, you got to do the pitch. You never know. Cause I've had a lot of pitches.
Perfect pitch right there.
I've had 100 pitches on the podcast that I've pitched that never amounted to anything, right. So with the D thing, it was leaning really thrash, and the record sort of changed at the last minute. Well, not at the last minute, but towards the end, where we brought in like John Mayer's song, we brought in a song that kind of was like a Mark Morton song, but we changed it to make it kind of fit D's voice better. And those songs ended up getting like a really good response. So, but there was like these thrashier ones that were like really pissed. Like we had this other one called like, Howard wrote the lyrics. It was called like Harder to Kill or something. It was like real generic thrash, and it was hard. Yeah. But he was like, no way. So now we're trying to like steer the next one to go a little heavier.
Nice. Oh, so you're trying to gently push them in that direction.
Let's get some like Cannibal Corpse with Dee Snider vocals.
Not that heavy, although he did really, you know, go with some really heavy vocals that were out of his wheelhouse, like on I Am the Hurricane. That's him. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks for playing it. We saw that he could really do that, and now the songs are popping live where people want. It's weird. You never see like a classic artist like that. You go to his Facebook and people are like, I really hope you're playing new songs at this show.
You never heard of that.
Yeah.
It's always the old stuff.
Yeah, and he'll call me and be like, did you see? And I'm like, yeah, it's fucking crazy. So it's cool.
That's one of my favorite things I've seen this in 2018.
That's cool.
It's
thanks.
So cool to see that experiment work out. I wanted to do it with Sebastian Bach. And it was pitched like I think in 2011, and then it didn't happen. I used one of the songs on my Jost album, and then the rest went into a hard drive. So I was even looking at some of those ideas and thinking, man, maybe D will do that for his second album. But yeah, we'll see. And then I have another Jost album that I'm trying to finish, but I might not have time.
Yeah.
So it might get pushed.
Nice.
Yeah, I got a lot of songs together, but we'll see, because we got the Hatebreed 25th anniversary next year. So
we're awesome.
That'll last.
What about a new Hatebreed record?
Yeah, you know what? Nuclear Blast wants one, but I think with the 25th anniversary, people are going to want to see kind of like a retro sort of set and tour, so, which is fine. We'll do that. Like, we're not like...
But you always mention on the podcast how you're always pushing forward. You don't like to look back and like nostalgia. You're not into that.
Right, but nostalgia sells so well that will help me make decisions. Like, that will help...
That'll help you fund the next record.
Yes. Yeah, so it's okay to appease that part of people. We saw that with...
Don't get stuck in it.
Right. We make a joke. Like, we have a joke because online, you know, people will say, like, play this old song. Someone was saying, play Killin' Addict for Denver, for the Denver show. Play Killin' Addict. It's not even like our... If you look on Spotify, there's no songs from our first album or our first EP. Like, even in the top, like, 50 songs.
It's going to sound weird live if it doesn't sound like crap, though. On the, like, the record.
Right, exactly. Oh, hey. So we busted it out, and, you know, it makes, like, two people. And the rest of the audience stands there. They don't know what to do. They're like, what is this? Then it makes two people so happy that it's worth it. Yeah. So you go, yeah, they're stuck in 1995. And God bless them, because we, you know, because it's only a minute and a half.
Yeah.
We can do that for you.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not, we're people have, I call it like the bubble. You get trapped in the bubble where you believe whatever you're reading in the bubble. So if someone goes on Twitter and they go, Hatebreed didn't play any old songs, they weren't at the show. That's just what they believe because they're trapped in a bubble, because that's what they read on Twitter. But that's not true,
because
we've always played the old songs. It just happens that those songs kill the vibe because nobody knows them. But, right, like we did, like we do a tour where we said 20 years of satisfaction. And the tour was so well attended, even though no one knew any of those songs. You had the two guys come out of Mosh Retirement, which was fun.
We all got bad news.
Right, but nobody knew the songs, which was hilarious because we were like, and then we announced this tour and we put it on sale and it's like sold out in Chicago, sold out in Baltimore, so, and we're like, this is awesome. Then we're playing the songs and the vibe is so dead. And then we go into Looking Down the Barrel of Today and the people are singing every word, they're killing each other. But so you have to kind of, you have to play the game of nostalgia, but don't really get stuck in there.
All right.
Right on, man.
All right, so one of our favorite questions to ask, we ask this of everybody up and down the line, and if you can show us, pick a scar on your body and tell us how the story about how you got it, man.
Okay, so this scar on my head right here, I don't know, can you still see it? I had multiple. Can you see this one on my eye?
Yeah, right in your eyes.
Okay, so I was just talking about this the other day because I'm trying to get rid of all my stuff in storage, and I'm trying to just not have... so much stuff. We had all these wheels for the cabs.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm like, where the fuck are these wheels? Where the fuck are these wheels? And couldn't find them, so whatever, we gave up. And then we're blowing out everything for the mail order for the D album. Right. So we put on a bunch of CDs on sale, a bunch of Joss shirts, Hatewear,
yes.
And D's pre-orders went crazy. And it was awesome. I even went and filled pre-orders myself.
That's
it was
awesome.
It was so fun. I sat there with D, he signed all the records. It was great. We had a really good time. We listened to music. I stayed up one night when D flew home. I stayed up with my buddy Chris. Shout out to Chris. We stayed up and we just packed all the orders because I really told D, I was like, everybody's going to get this fucking record before Street Day. They're going to show, we're going to over deliver.
I think we stopped.
Yeah, I said, we're going to put in, even if you didn't order a sticker, you're getting a sticker. If you didn't order a patch, you're getting a patch. So we really.
Taking pictures going, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, and so when I was up there looking for the crap, I remembered whatever, like last year or the year before, I'm up there looking and I see this box and I go to grab it and this wheel flies out and it's like slow motion, like, and just bashes me.
Right into your eye.
Yeah, and it's, and I thought nothing of it, whatever. Didn't go to get stitches. And then it got infected. Then I had to go and they had to scrape the whatever
staff or whatever.
Yeah, and then they just gave me 2 stitches or whatever. But yeah, but so now I don't. Now my new thing is I want everything at like neck level,
nothing higher,
like nothing lower than the knees, and nothing higher than like the neck eyeball line.
Right on, man. Well, thanks for giving us so much of your time. Any last words for the Northwest audience?
Just thanks everybody. That's, you know, we've. I guess our new theory is if you stay out of certain places, then you create, like, it's distance makes the heart grow fonder. So both us and Guar, our lowest attended shows, like, of the last couple tours were always Pacific Northwest. And now for this tour, the 2 shows that are going to be sold out are Seattle and Portland, like, over 1,000 people. So thank you to everybody.
Yeah.
Yes. And go out to Hatebreed shows, buy their shirts, support their music. Yeah. And listen to the Joss the Podcast. Can you plug that real quick to let everyone know where to find it?
Yeah, it's on there's always the current 15 are always on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and everything. And then the archives, if you want to subscribe, it's gasdigitalnetwork.com. I just ask that you use the code JOSTA, and that helps me because I have some stake in the network. But yeah.
And get your boner pills at Blue Chew.
Yes. Hopefully Blue Chew is going to renew. We'll see. I'm going on a live podcast Wednesday on Legion of Skanks. I'm going on at, they're doing it at the Comedy Store in LA. And I think Blue Chew is going to be there. So hopefully that meeting, I got a pitch for the Blue Chew guy.
Nice.
Yeah. Like I think we need literally. I think we need to do like Blue Chew for the D pre-order.
Nice.
Right?
All you old metalheads.
You're a genius.
Right? Like, put the Blue Chew in with the pre-order.
This album is hard.
Yeah.
This album is hard, and you can be too.
Yes. Right?
See, there's a new slogan.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Right. Jamie Jossa from Hatebreed. It's Metal Shop on The Rock.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.